Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
To Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. Sai Ram and good morning dear listeners, welcome to Thursday Live. You are tuned to our Asia stream coming to you from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and it's my divine privilege to be hosting this segment, Morning Glory. On the sound console is audio engineer Brother Ganesh. We are coming to you live from the Radio Sai studios here at Prashanti Nilayam, where the time right now is 9:40 a.m. Thank you for staying with us on this bright and beautiful Thursday morning, December the 5th, 2013. Current weather conditions in Prashanti Nilayam call for clear skies and a gentle breeze. And an hour ago when I walked into the office, there actually was a nip in the air. Temperatures overnight minimum 18 degrees Celsius, maximum 30 degrees Celsius.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai. Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, thank you for your company on Morning Glory. Here's what's making news at this hour in Prashanti Nilayam. The abode of Supreme Peace has had a wonderful recharge of sorts with the recent birthday celebrations, and now everyone in this divine paradise is busy going about their work with sincerity and dedication as Bhagwan has taught us. Our hospitals are treating thousands of patients every single day. Our schools and colleges are delivering the ideal Sai system of education to thousands of students from grade 1 level to postdoctoral levels. The Sai water projects, existing and new ones, are providing clean water not to thousands but to millions of people. All this without any payment by the beneficiaries of this generosity, and more importantly, without any fanfare. Such is the nature of the divine that selfless love just flows. It's not contrived, it needs no publicity, and is as natural as breathing. Meanwhile, the ashram is welcoming overseas devotees on a daily basis for the big day ahead. You guessed it, the Christmas buzz in the Western canteen is loud and clear, and the number of devotees is growing each day. One can spot devotees going about the ashram with musical instruments, obviously headed to their Christmas choir practice. Dear sisters and brothers, what is it that you're waiting for? Now is the time to head home for Christmas. What holier Christmas destination than Prashanti Nilayam? Prashanti Nilayam, as you know, celebrates Christmas like no place else. Everything here is pure, wholesome and spiritually charged. There is no commercial angle to this holy day inside the ashram. And something very unique about this place is that everyone, that is, Hindus and Muslims, Christians, Sikhs, Jews, all Sai devotees celebrate Christmas with the same fervor and joy and devotion with which we celebrate Mahashivratri or Eid or Buddha Purnima or Ganesh Chaturthi. True to Bhagwan Baba's message that paths are many but the goal is one, that religions are many but God is one, Prashanti Nilayam celebrates the glory of the one and only God through every faith and culture. Don't you sometimes wish that the rest of the world also shares such an all-inclusive vision? Let us at least keep up our prayers for the well-being of all life forms in all the worlds. Samasta loka sukhino bhavantu. Let us pray thus several times throughout the day. With that, it's time to announce the feast we have lined up for you this morning. We have some lovely feedback from our young listeners from the USA and Singapore. And before I play it, I will first be playing a Radio Sai exclusive interview on Morning Glory. This is an enlightening conversation with Justice Venkat Chalaya, the current and third chancellor of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. On the day of the convocation, that is November 22, 2013, our Chancellor Sir was gracious enough to spare us some time for a short interview in which he shared his respect for the education system of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba and his admiration for Baba's selfless love for humanity. This interview is one of the finest I have had the honor of recording, and I urge you, dear listeners, to stay with us and listen to the exceptional wisdom and humility that came through in the words of the Chancellor of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Justice Venkat Chalaya, who, incidentally, is the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of India. And we will wrap up Morning Glory today with the next part of our ongoing series of interviews with Mr. Gautam Dutt under the Fleeting Moments series. So let's get the show on the road. Here is the short interview that we recorded on November 22nd with Justice Venkat Chalaya, the current and third chancellor of the Sai University. And by the way, dear listeners, this is a video interview, and we will post the video interview on our website, radiosai.org, shortly. For now, here it is for your listening pleasure.
Sai Ram. Radio Sai is honored to have with us the third chancellor of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Prashanthi Nilayam, Justice M.N. Venkata Chalaya. Justice M.N. Venkata Chalaya comes to this important role after Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, the revered founder chancellor of the Sai University, and Justice P.N. Bhagavati, our second chancellor. As you may know, the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning was founded on October the 31st, 1981 by Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba for fostering the composite culture of India and to promote in the students and teachers an awareness and understanding of the social needs of the country with special focus on the rural population, and to further inculcate in students an international outlook imbibing human values along with the spiritual and scientific education. Now, to this important role, the current Chancellor, Mr. Manipalli Narayana Rao Venkata Chalaya, comes with impeccable and impressive credentials, a resume that seems customized for this crucial responsibility. Justice Venkata Chalaya is a native of Manipalli village in Lepakshi Mandal of Anantapur district of Andhra Pradesh, which is not too far from here. He was born on October 25, 1929. He earned his bachelor's in science and bachelor's in law from the University of Mysore and started practicing law in 1951. He was later conferred the Doctor of Letters by the Pondicherry University and Doctor of Laws by the Manipal University. His career in the area of jurisprudence has seen him work as a permanent judge at the Karnataka High Court and as a judge of the Supreme Court of India. On February 12, 1993, Justice Venkata Chalaya became the 25th Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of India. Post-retirement, he continued to work on anti-corruption and human rights issues, including support for the Initiatives of Change Center for Governance. Some of the other distinguished positions that he has held include Chairman, National Human Rights Commission. He also headed the National Commission to review the working of the Indian Constitution. He is currently serving on the advisory board of Foundation for the Restoration of National Values to Restore National and Cultural Values of India. From all angles, it appears that Justice Venkata Chalaya's distinguished career path has culminated in the role that destiny had in store for him as the Chancellor of the Sai University. Sai Ram, Justice Venkata Chalaya, and a very warm welcome to Radio Sai, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir.
So today, on the occasion of the 32nd convocation of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, you delivered your very first speech as the university's chancellor. And what a fabulous speech it was, if I may say so. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. But you know, chancellors don't speak on the occasion of convocations. And I was chancellor of the Central University of Hyderabad.
Right.
There, in that ceremonial
role,
chancellor doesn't speak. He simply, that's something like the speaker who should not speak. He's not expected to speak. But this was a different drill.
Because the precedence has been set by our revered founder chancellor, who was so hands-on.
Hands-on, that's the right thing.
And I'm sure it's not the first time you're speaking at any convocation. So how was this any different?
As addressed a large number of convocations as the chief guest. This university is something totally different. You know, there's an expansion of educational endeavor in the country. In just 6 years, in 2006, the total number of colleges in this country was about 19,000.
Mm-hmm.
By 2012, it became 46,000.
Wow.
And in the process of this expansion, inevitably quality suffers. Teaching staff, adequate infrastructure for colleges, so many concomitants of good education are missing. But in this university, mind you, students don't pay any fee, and they are respected as the potential leaders of the society, community, that put on velvet and treated as potentially divine inspirations of the society. That purpose makes all the difference. The difference is not in the instructional facilities or infrastructure or equipment, laboratories, but the distinction is in the philosophy that guides this educational endeavor as to what you are going to turn out students into.
Mm-hmm.
That purpose is a ennobling purpose. That makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm. This morning in your convocation address, you also spoke of turning points in civilizations, and you described the Sai University's vision as an enormous experiment in human engineering and man-making. What role do you see the Sai University play in the history of civilization?
See, the Homo sapien is not merely a genetic descendant of the Neanderthal man. Homo sapien is a new species of human being. This is what Ian Tattersall, the curator of the British, American National History Museum, said. That means a lot of things. It is not merely, the role of this is not only set up a model for education. It is not merely a kind of a reaction to a mediocrity in the philosophy of education that we see in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not some kind of a reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a proactive process of hastening the process of evolution. You see, this is, you see, we say when we go into pranayama, for example,
right,
we say the philosophy is to condense the process of evolution itself. And 1,000 years of repetitive human births are compressed, and there is that approach to the meditative and pranayamic processes. I am only saying that this is different in the sense, it's not merely in the quality of difference. It's an entirely new response to a future situation a man like Baba himself could have envisaged. I'll tell you in one minute.
Please.
The whole hierarchical Hindu society with its own degeneration, it has served its purpose. The Vedic knowledge has served its purpose. Still, it is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
But the monopolistic possession of this knowledge tended to make the possessors exploitative and exercise a psychic domination over society. Society suffered it because in the balance of events, what's the good, what's the bad, in the trade-off, they sit still, but at some point of time, not merely because a bearded leader said so, time had come, it collapsed. Along with the bathwater, many babies were washed away. So many moral absolutes of truth, beauty, goodness, loyalty, courage, dedication, family values, all of them were washed away. What we see in the deluge is that the society that followed was not immoral, it was amoral. There are no standards to go by. The result is that this has to be repackaged. These are necessary things. Without the exploitative element, these moral elements were necessary. They had to be repackaged into to fit into the conception of a new just and fair society, human society. This is the process which I think great seers foresaw and prepared this for a future far-off event where a new civilization emerges based on the values, durable and enduring values of the previous civilization and without the incidents of the tyranny of a feudal society. This transformation is the ultimate goal. This is what I think some of these great men have thought.
That's a very far-sighted perspective, very interesting indeed. Now, you also spoke about the character-building aspect of Satyasai education this morning, and you said it was very important to lift this mood of cynicism and despair and frustration that is very prevalent, especially amongst the youth. Do you think that is a realistic expectation, given the state of our country or the world around us today?
See, idealism is not a mass phenomenon. Nobody fools himself by saying, I can transform every man into a saint. But the composite percentage of people who have a correct perception of the means and ends of societies, why do men form themselves into an association, human association, political association? That is that we promise each, every member, the best opportunity of realizing his highest self. This is the purpose, basic compact society. If that basic assumption is given a go by, why should men obey laws, obey rules of society? Then the chaos. This is where that at least some influential section of society is imbued with these values. Not that Baba's or anybody's teachings would transform every individual into a saint. That is a too naive thing to say. But those who have come under the spell of this great force and influence, for example, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Vivekananda, they saw the future and what are the types of things that we must put in place to see that the water doesn't overflow the bounds. This is how one should look at it.
Sir, I must say your optimism is very heartening. After spending so many years in public life, and as you just said, how many lousy years did you spend in Delhi? It's very nice to hear that from you. You also, this morning in your convocation address, you referred to our teachers as acharyas.
You see, I'll tell you, the purpose of my conception of a teacher in Kalidasa, in the Malavikagna Mitra, he defines what is a good teacher, what does he should have. Of course he must have knowledge, but knowledge by itself can make a tyranny of a teacher. He can make a tyrannical master. But a impersonal love for mankind and a kind of a love for his student, this is what a combination of learning plus this love for the student and his future, in the context of Baba's philosophy, this makes the real acharya. And he wants every student of his to excel him. And this is the greatest satisfaction for a master, is that he is excelled by his own student. this feeling when I talk to a teacher, they're really imbued by Baba's grace. They think they are the special recipients of his grace, and that they should impart it to their students.
And as you said, it's about the nobility of the purpose.
Yes.
They are here not because it's employment. Mm-hmm. They are here because they believe in the mission.
Yeah, the mission. Yes,
yes, absolutely.
Right, yes.
Now, you're an eminent citizen of India and also the third chancellor of the Sri Sathya Sai University, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. What would you tell your peers outside about this university?
See, it's an indescribable moral order. It is a fresh breeze in the philosophy of education. Why would any saint spend money, put up an institution, give free education? Why? Everybody uses education as a means of business. Today it's a big business.
Entrepreneurship.
Entrepreneurship in education.
Yes.
Whatever you goes by that name. What I feel is that he had a vision of the future. He had seen the problems that come by a collapse of a feudal society. And that in China this happened. They called it the Cultural Revolution. Almost 50, 60 million people were killed in the process.
Mm-hmm.
They lost their lives. Let us not say killed. They lost their lives. And in the Chinese famine between 1958 to 61, 30 million people perished.
Oh my God.
And when successive crop failures occurred in Maharashtra, bordering on famine conditions, not one life was lost for starvation because the employment guarantee scheme was administered so beautifully by the bureaucracy. So, Baba and men of such visionaries foresee what's going to happen and what are the dikes and bulwarks that are necessary to be placed. And nothing is more important than putting up these human bulwarks against this kind of deluge. This is perhaps the man-building, human engineering side.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. What do you like the most about your new job as the Chancellor of the Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning?
I'm just trying to wonder. See, Vismayo Yoga Bhumika, they say, the sense of wonderment is the beginning of learning. I met Baba once or twice, that's all.
Yes.
I belong to a different religious denomination, which has its own rules.
Mm-hmm.
But he invited me to inaugurate a conference some years ago, almost 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I sat next to him. Every 10 minutes he would run his hand over my back and pat me. Heard of Baba, of course everybody has. Had my own image of him. As a chancellors have very little to do with the administration. There's some kind of a
titular head.
But more than you ask me what you expect to do to the university, I would rather put it this way. What the philosophy of this university is going to do to me is what is interesting to me.
Wow. You're being extremely humble.
No. These are not ordinary things. These are not the models of the marketplace. These values are different.
They're timeless. They've stood the test of time.
What is it that destiny is in store for me in contact with? I'm 85. My sands are running out. But to see this itself through these children itself is a heartwarming thing. Tears well in your eyes of joy that this country has this kind. To see those boys who serve you, who come, where do you get that? Hippie people who are there, who go to the universities. I've been chancellor of some universities. I've addressed a large number of convocations. One university couldn't hold a convocation for 17 years because of the riotous students' response to the institution. And the governor asked me to see, we are starting the process, you must come and address them. See, why children misbehave? Because the parents have misbehaved worse. And this is a trying to build another civilization. Within, of course, in the framework of our values.
That's a huge compliment, beautiful endorsement. Now, if for a moment our revered founder chancellor was right here physically in front of you, what would you say to him?
Seeing his work, I would say, Baba, have a kind thought for the world, as you always have. Mm-hmm. You can't exceed his wisdom, you can't give him, see, this impersonal love for mankind has a manifestation of its own in various ways. If that spirit enters in you, it gives you indications of what you should do and takes over the whole thing. It's something like I was speaking of what is going to happen in the next decision making in science, in everything, what they call the technological singularity. Mm-hmm. The computers will decide, artificial intelligence will mm-hmm. decide what you want to decide. So this is a kind of a technological singularity in the spiritual singularity.
And you think it's sustainable?
I can't say that because there are so many factors external to the whole process that will add sustainability. But as an effort, we can't. This is something which... idealism is not a mass phenomenon. You can't have... The whole country could be potentially ideal. The need to make them ideal would not arise at all. Mm-hmm. So, that's why they say this creation is niruktancha, niruktancha, nilayancha, nilayanta, satyancha, andruktancha, satyamitya, chakshati. It's a combination of various things. You can't... To watch this experiment itself is a serious meditation.
Very, very beautifully said.
Oh, thank you.
Indeed. Sir, as the Chancellor, what is your message for the students of the Satya Institute of Higher Learning as well as the alumni of the university, which is reasonably strong?
You are all blessed. Keep that blessing dear to your heart and strive to preserve it in your heart, in the innermost recesses of your heart, and the greatest value that you have acquired in this world. That's all that I can say.
Beautiful message to be cherished. I'm sure you heard our chief guest, Mr. Sam Pitroda, speak very highly of a colleague of his who is the alumnus of the Sai University.
Oh, yes, that is one just instance of what we are discussing about. This is one demonstration of what we are discussing about.
And there are many such stars all over.
I see you.
And my colleague behind me, Vinod, and my colleague in the recording studio, we are all alumni of the Sai University, sir.
Yes.
And very honored to serve our alma mater and the mission that gave us our education. Do you listen to Radio Sai, sir?
No.
Oh, you must.
I came to know its existence today.
So today is the first day when you're going to start listening to Radio Sai because you'll remain connected with Prashanthi Nilayam. And in fact, the entire program, when you spoke, it was being webcasted live all over the world while you were speaking.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that I was under such surveillance.
You were being widely watched, sir.
I look at the world a little differently from young people like you. You have a different take on it. I've seen the seamy side. I've seen the kind of suffering people go through. As chairman of the National Human Rights Commission, I had occasion to examine the most embarrassing tyrannical behavior of those in authority or those, their own brothers and sisters in the country. Why do people do that is a question which often comes up to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I so cruel merely because then it dawned on me that power is something which exaggerates every weakness in man. Possession of power, economic power, physical power, exaggerates every weakness in man. And this Sai solution is the only thing that can make power ennoble, liberated from that degenerating influence.
That's a fantastic perspective, beautiful insight. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. This is such stimulating conversation. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
You've been very kind. Thank you.
And you must come back and have a longer chat with us next time. I know you have to be in the mandir about now.
Oh, yeah. No, 4:30. I'm all right. Thank you. Grateful.
Did you want to add anything else, sir?
No. Thank you very much. You have been most gracious. I don't want to add that.
Thank you. Sai Ram, sir.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory. You just heard an interview with the third and current chancellor of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Justice Venkat Chalaya. This was recorded in Prashanthi Nilayam on on the day of the convocation, November 22, 2013. And dear listeners, we always welcome your feedback. So do write to us. You can reach us at listener@radiosai.org.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Moving along, dear listeners, your feedback is very important to us. So right now I'm going to play for you a clip from Sai Vishuddhi of USA. She recorded this when she came to our studio to collect a prize she won in a Radio Sai poetry contest for children. And this is really something coming from a pure heart of a little child, Sai Vishuddhi Chandrasekhar of USA. And I think the clip speaks for itself, so I'll let her do the talking.
Sai Ram, my name is Sai Vishuddhi Chandrasekhar. I'm from the Flushing Sai Center. And what I like about Radio Sai is that there's so many things for me to read and listen to about Swami. And whenever I want to, let's say, read a Chinnakatha, I can always go on the site and see which Chinnakatha I like. And if I want to listen to bhajans and learn a new bhajan, I can just always click on Bhajan Tutor. And I feel that that's really something that I enjoy. And whenever I want to get in touch with Swami and feel that how close I am to him, I can always just click a button. I don't have to fly all the way to Prashanthi Nilayam every time. I can just click a button and hear Swami, and I can feel his presence with me. And so I wrote a poem on Guru Purnima about how Swami was my inner guru. And now I'm so honored to be in Radio Sai and getting a tour of the studios and seeing everything. And as a thank you to Swami, I'd like to sing a song, Mother O Mother Sai Ma. Mother O Mother Sai Ma, you mean the whole world to me, Sai Ma. Mother, O Mother, Sai Ma, you are the light of my life, Sai Ma. Ma, Sai Ma. Ma, Sai Ma. In times of darkness and despair, I call your name, you're always there. How can I thank you, my dear Sai Ma, for all your patience and love, Sai Ma, Ma, Sai Ma. Ma, Sai Ma, Ma, Sai Ma, Ma, O Sai Ma, Mother, O Mother, Sai Ma, you mean the whole world to me, Sai Ma. Mother, oh Mother Sai Ma. You are the light of my life. Sai Ma. Ma Sai Ma. Ma Sai Ma. Ma Sai Ma. Ma Oh Sai Ma. In times of darkness and despair, I call your name. You're always there. How can I thank you, my dear Sai Ma, for all your patience and love, Sai Ma, Ma, Sai Ma, Ma, Sai Ma, Ma, Sai Ma, Ma, oh, Sai Ma. Mother, oh Mother Sai Ma, you mean the whole world to me, Sai Ma.
Sai Ram, that was our young listener from the USA, Sai Vishuddhi Chandrasekhar, sharing her thoughts on what Radio Sai means to her and how it keeps her connected to Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. So hot, heartwarming to hear back from a sweet young listener. And now I'd like to read out to you excerpts of an email we have received from another very young Radio Sai listener. This one comes from Vasanti of Singapore. Her email speaks for itself and I'm going to read a few parts of it. This is what she writes to the Radio Sai team. My name is Vasanti. I'm born and brought up in Singapore. I'm 12 years old. My sister Sai, 8 years old, and I attend Balvikas in Singapore. Every night I listen to Radio Sai's Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. I was introduced to Radio Sai from a very young age by my mom, and these talks are now like a lullaby for me at night. My family listens to Radio Sai every day. I even download these talks on my phone so that I can listen to it while riding on the bus to school. The talks have so many close interactions with Swami. Hearing all these wonderful people is just amazing. There are also many values to be learned from these talks. I keep remembering and reminding myself of the assurance that Swami has showered on all of us through all of you, Swami students. I have listened to many amazing interviews such as Brother Raghuram Bhatt, Brother Satyanarayana Babu, Sister Sai Sudha, Sister Karishma Sundar, the list goes on. When I grow up, I want to host Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories and make my voice project over the world. I will always listen to Fleeting Moments because, as you say, these moments are fleeting, but these memories are cherished and lasting. Thank you, Swami, for the love and grace showered on one and all through Radio Sai. Jai Sai Ram, Vasanti. Thank you, dear Vasanti, and thank you, Sai Vishuddhi, for your feedback. At Radio Sai, we are pleasantly surprised and utterly delighted that youngsters such as you both tune into Radio Sai. Truly, Baba's love and message are for everyone, the young, the old, the young at heart, everyone without any barriers of age. So, dear listeners, what are you waiting for? This is an open invitation to all of you to please share your feedback and suggestions on how we can further improve in our efforts to deliver Baba's message of love and harmony to more and more listeners. We truly value your feedback, including constructive criticism. We are here to serve you and we want to do a bang good job of it. Because when you're pleased, Bhagwan is pleased. With that, it's now time to play the next part of our continuing series of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. And today is the next part of our interview with Mr. Gautam Dutt. And he's in conversation with Radio Sai's brother Bishu Prushti.
One small incident I can tell you. For many days, I used to contemplate, what would it look like if you see Shiva doing Tandav?
Mm-hmm.
And, this had been going on in my mind for some time. And I was contemplating it. I used to think about it day after day for quite a few days. what would, you know, Tandav be like, or Shivasana? And then Baba showed me.
He showed you?
Yes.
The dance of Shiva.
The dance of Shiva. You see, I was sitting in the veranda that day, and I was thinking the same, you know, I was contemplating this. How would it be, you know, Shiv Tandav? How would it be? What would it look like? And then I felt Baba was standing near the interview room door. And this is where he showed me his beyond space and time also. Because this was done in public. I don't know how many people noticed it. I was sitting in the middle of the veranda. You know, in those days it would be right in front of the mandir middle door.
Yes.
Yeah, right there. Towards the outside. So I could see Baba when he was standing near the interview room door. And I felt Baba was, you know, urgently looking at me as if he wanted me to look at him. And I immediately became alert and I started looking at Baba because I knew something was going to happen. And then Baba started swaying, you know, as he does normally. And then he danced some steps.
Just right there in front
right
of you?
Right there. And the next minute, he was behind. Not next minute, second. He was in front of the interview room door. He did the dance. The next minute, he was near the back door. And he did the same steps there. And in a flash, he was right on the other end of the veranda. And the same steps.
So was it some kind of a vision?
No, no, no. It was not Shiva. He didn't change his form or anything. It was Bhagwan. It was Baba. But it was Baba doing the steps. And they were so beautiful. So beautiful. He did the steps in front, and then the next second he was at the back, and then he repeated the steps. And then, you know, the whole environment became charged. This is what I experienced. And then after he finished the steps at the back, everything came back to normal. But Baba was at the back.
This is something which others also would have seen that day.
I have no idea. But this is what I saw. And it was an amazing experience, totally out of the world. The steps that he danced, the way he swayed was so beautiful.
Bhajans were not going on in the background.
No, no, no. Bhajans were not going on at that time. So this was one of the experiences. And it showed me, you know, he's just beyond space and time. I didn't feel that anybody noticed it. That was another amazing thing.
You were praying for it and it was meant for you.
Possibly. Possibly. But I got what I wanted to see, you know. And it was very beautiful. So this is one of the experiences I had.
It reminds me of what you mentioned last time. The opportunity when you had the first darshan of Swami, you know, in Mr. Somalal's house when you locked your eyes with Bhagwan. It was one of those life-defining divine moments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course it was. I mean, not days, for months, you know, I used to contemplate that particular movement that Swami did. Even today, it elevates me when I think about it, the way he did it, you know. But the point was, how did he get from A to B, you know, in that split second? I mean, even if I was to run my fastest, I couldn't be in that two places immediately in 1 second. It's not possible. Of course, he showed me the dance of Shiva, but he also showed me that he's beyond space and time, you know, in the same instance. And that is what the Tandav is all about. It's about Shiva's dance beyond space and time. You know?
Exactly. Amazing. There's so many moments of revelation.
I'm sure many people would have different kind of experiences which Baba has given them, you know. And as he said, it's what you want. It's what you look for.
Exactly.
And Jesus said, you know, knock and the door will be opened. And here was the divine. He used to tell us, I'm ready to give, but you know, you are sitting under the Kalpataru tree asking for coffee powder
all the time. Yeah.
Which is very true, you know. In those days, you know, I think even the students were quite devoted. And I know there were students who used to say, if Baba told me to sweep the floor for the rest of my life, here I will do it. You know?
Yes.
You know, those kind of things. So, Swami's reaction, resound, reflection, he gives you what you want, what you look for, what you seek. And that is why he's the...
So you were very different at the end of 5 years.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Oh yes, in many ways. Many, many ways. You know, for example, one of the things he told me when I was in my first year was, if you are a good boy, I will take you to Kodaikanal and Ooty.
Kodaikanal and Ooty?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was very thrilled. And I knew that Baba used to go in the summer and, you know, he used to take a group of boys with him. So I thought, you know, here it is. I was very, very particular, you know, trying to be good, getting up on time, you know, reading Suprabhatam and all that.
That is one very interesting thing about Swami, you know, he can do just one thing and, you know, he can bring out all those positive things.
I didn't realize one thing. What did he mean by if you're a good boy? Okay. I didn't understand that.
Mm.
I thought, if I'm good and there are no complaints about me, Baba is going to take me to Kodaikanal. And summer came, Baba left without me.
Without you? Yeah. It's the first year?
Yeah, my first year. And I cried.
Whole year you've been good.
Yeah, and I cried every day of that summer because he didn't let me go home.
Is it?
Yeah, after I came to Puttaparthi, he didn't let me go home. He didn't let me go out at all.
So winter vacations you were here and...
All vacations I was here.
All vacations, even summer vacation. Even when he went to Ooty.
Whenever he went, yeah, but he didn't allow. Whenever I used to ask him, Swami, I have to go home, he used to say, no, Rumusku.
Keep quiet.
Yeah, keep quiet.
And so then, you should just stay in Prashanthi.
Normosku Kurchandi. Means shut up and sit down. That's it.
Oh my God.
He didn't allow. Except on one particular occasion when he wanted me to go. But otherwise, no. So we ended up staying.
So it's very painful, like you're not allowed to go home and he's gone to Kodaikanal.
Yeah, and seeing everybody in the hostel, you know, going home.
Going,
you know, and especially when you just newly come to...
Yeah, you can't go home and Swami's not going to take you home. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, and where did we stay? We stayed in the old boys hostel, which was even more difficult.
Yeah.
Because when Baba was not here, it was more difficult.
Very difficult to stay.
Yeah, Mr. Kutumrao used to come and give us talks and, you know, used to scare us. He used to say things like, you know, if you're not doing anything, the best thing to do is to lie down and cover your head with a sheet. This is the best thing to do.
Oh my God.
And our life was, you know, canteen, the South Indian canteen.
Yes.
And back to the old hostel. And then Mandir, back to the old hostel. This was the triangle. That's it.
That's it.
Nothing more. And we used to sleep in the Mandir in the evening. So, you know, it was very difficult for me in the beginning. Because you're used to all that freedom and you had to walk, you know, with your eyes looking down.
All the time.
All the time. And if somebody saw you, they would complain. And, you know, Baba used to send word from Ooty or Kodaikanal, wherever he was, tell so-and-so he's talking too much or tell, you know.
Oh, my God.
And Mr. Kutumrao used to be there to convey the news.
You're so, constantly under vigilance.
Yes, constantly. Maybe others couldn't see you, but Swami could, you know, and he would send word, this person is not following the proper discipline, he's talking too much, or, you know, he tells so-and-so that he should go for Suprabhatam or something like that, you know. All these messages used to come from Ooty and Kodaikanal, wherever he was, sometimes in Bangalore. So it used to be quite tough. So he didn't let me go for a long time.
So the first day you didn't have a chance, did you ever go to Kodaikanal with Swami?
Yeah, I did. But, see, this is Baba, this is what I was saying. First year I cried, I used to cry myself to sleep every evening and then, you know, Baba left me behind and all that. Next year I was a little sad, but...
You expected he will take you.
Yeah, because, you know, Baba has said, so his word cannot be false, so... Next year, I didn't cry, but I was sad he didn't take me. And then third year, I kind of gave up and I said, okay, it's his will, you know. If he doesn't want me, maybe I'm not a good boy. And
but still, you're staying in the Mandir.
Yeah. We were staying in Puttaparthi only. And then, when I completed my post-graduation, 1989, he suddenly sent word and he said, I'm taking you to Ooty and Kodaikanal. So, Baba observed me for 5 years.
5 years?
Yes. After 5 years, he said, right, now you deserve, you know, a trip.
So that was one way to keep you on track for 5 years.
You see, this is the God is a taskmaster. He doesn't take things lightly. He doesn't let you take things lightly. And he's very serious about what he says and does. We misinterpret. We take it very superficially. But he's not. And he tested for 5 years, a lot, you know. And I guess I passed the test because he took me to Kodaikanal in 1989. And by that time, it's what I call mental weightlifting, you know. Mental weightlifting. The whole purpose of spiritual sadhana is to develop your willpower. He had developed my willpower to such an extent that it became very strong. And that's what he wanted, I think. That's what he did. He cleaned the mirror and he made me strong. So I went through lots of things, but ultimately the fruit was... the trip to Ooty and Kodaikanal. It was one of the best trips I ever seen, I think, 1989. And then after he finished the trip, he asked me, he said, not physically. Again, that Akashvani.
Oh.
Said, are you satisfied? And I said, Swami, my heart is full. And he said, Manchadi. So, I mean, that trip all by itself was enough to last lifetimes.
So the culmination of all these 5 years of penance. Or
I guess. And what opportunities he gave me in Kodaikanal was amazing. I'll tell you one very simple thing. It might look simple, but for me it was one of the things that I cherish. What happened in Kodaikanal was, for the first time, somebody bought a sound system. So the hall which was built there, the bhajans were sung with the, using the mics and everything. So Baba looked around and he said, who's the person who knows about the audiovisual equipment? Everybody pointed to me because I used to work in the maintenance department. So they said, he's the guy. So I happened to get the responsibility of doing the audiovisual system. And I didn't want to, because doing the audiovisual system meant that after everybody had finished, you had to pack up the system. And then you would be the last one to enter Baba's hall, you know.
Sai Shruti.
Yeah, Sai Shruti.
The session would have started, you can't sit in front. And
yes, and you would be out, so you would be behind somewhere. But you see how Baba does things. What happened is, sessions used to be very long, so people's backs used to pain. So everybody used to try to find a place which was more comfortable. So when I used to finish packing up the audiovisual system and I used to come, there was only one place left, and that was at Baba's feet.
Oh,
can you ever believe that?
Maybe it was all just designed.
It was his design, yes. Of course it was his design. So I ended up sitting at his feet every day when he used to give the discourse. Baba will put his feet on your lap and you will be doing Aad Seva. So, you know, one foot used to be on my lap every day. The other foot used to be on somebody else's, whoever sat next to me. So people who sat next to me came and went. Till the last day I sat there in the front doing Seva. And I did Seva, Pad Seva to my heart's content. Which was another boon granted to me. Because
that is
a lovely moment. Yeah. I think it's his compassion.
It's compassion. Yeah, we can never ever do anything to deserve what we get.
And I really enjoyed it.
I think Kodaikanal is definitely for anyone who has been part of
a student, it's like, you know, going to Indraloka. I don't know how to describe that.
Yes.
It's like the ultimate.
It is the ultimate in terms of physical proximity that you can ever get from Bhagwan.
Very true. Ultimate. It's the ultimate experience, you know. Baba is also very different when he goes there. And his interaction with the students also is very different, you know.
What are your other memories of this Kodaikanal trip? Because you said it was so special. And I think in the earlier years, it was even more wonderful because Swami used to go around outside a lot. And I remember in one of those years, you know, he went out for a picnic and there were plenty of things that happened in those early years.
Not only that, first what Baba did was he took us to Mysore.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took us to Ooty. And then he took us to Kodaikanal. And it was a very long trip, in fact. It was more than a month. And then, again, while coming back, he stayed in Ooty. And then, again, we enjoyed his proximity in Vrindavan after we got back for a few days, you know. So it was a very nice, very fulfilling trip. When we went to Kodaikanal, on the first day itself, he sat down in the evening with all of us around him and he said, you know why I brought you here? And, of course, we didn't know. So we just kept quiet. And then he said, I brought you here because I want to tell you the story of Krishna.
Wow.
And then thereon began his discourses on the life of Krishna for the rest of the time we were in Kodaikanal, every day. And as he used to speak about Krishna's life, he would every day create something from Krishna's life, you know. So, of course, we have all the pictures and, you know, we've taken the different things that Baba created. But the story itself was so beautiful because he actually connected Krishna's life to Rama's life, you know. So what he showed was, or what he explained to us was that everything that took place in Krishna's life was because of something that happened in the life of the Ramavatar. So the cause was in the Ramavatar, and the effect was in the Krishna avatar. And one simple example I can give you, which is very common, Baba said, you know, Krishna and Balaram, you know, when they came to the capital, they killed the dhobi, who was carrying Kansa's clothes. So they asked him for the clothes and he didn't give it to them. And then with a blow, you know, Krishna killed him and then they took the clothes and they wore them and so on. And he said, why would Krishna do that? Krishna is a divine being and he used to do many things, and everything that he did he used to do with a smile because he knew the cause. He knew that it was the prayer of that person which he was answering. So that's why he used to do it with a smile. And then he said, what happened was, in the Ram Avatar, the dhobi who got drunk and told his wife that I'm not like Rama, you know, to keep Sita after she has gone to somebody else. When he recovered from his state of drunkenness, he realized what had happened. You know, Rama sent Sita away. He realized what he had done and that it was a big sin. So in those days, what Swami said was, outside Rama's palace, there used to be a big bell, a gong. Anybody who wanted to talk to Rama could do that by ringing the bell. So he went and he rang the bell, and then when he was called inside, he fell at Rama's feet and he said, punish me, because what I have done is a great sin, and the only way that I can undo this sin that I have done is if you kill me, take my life. And then Swami said, Rama told him, it's not possible, because I have been born as an avatar to fulfill a certain mission, and killing you is not part of it. So I cannot do it this time, but I'll do it next time. So when he killed the dhobi, Swami said, many people question this, why did Krishna have to kill the dhobi? He said, because it was the prayer of that soul at that time in Rama Avatar to, you know, overcome the sin that he had committed. So Krishna was actually answering the prayer of the devotee. And therefore, he, you know, he would smile.
And no one would know these linkages between the different avatars.
Yeah, so like that, he linked so many things that happened in Krishna's life.
We always know a very, very small part in a limited mind, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the whole perspective we always have. Very small perspective
very true,
of things.
Very true.
God has that big picture.
Yeah, he knows the big picture, you know. And I think when you think about it, what I realized was that all these are linked. Everything that happens with the avatar is all linked to what has happened before.
Yes.
So it's a continuation. It's not like an isolated incident where Rama is born and then, you know, Krishna is born as another isolated incident. It's not like that. It's all linked together. And then he said, don't record it. He said, nobody should record these discourses. And because we were not allowed to record it, we used to write it down.
Write it down, yeah.
Before we forget what he said.
Yes.
And the whole discourse, every day, we used to be mesmerizing, you know. He would bring out aspects of Krishna's life which we had never read in the Bhagavatam or never read anywhere.
Even the relationship between Gopikas, Radha and Krishna, I think the way Swami is explained, I don't think it is there anywhere.
No, no, that's true. Because it's coming from the mouth of the one who has been himself, you know, playing that role. So obviously he knows everything that is going there. It's not an interpretation. It's the actual thing.
Exactly.
I think that's what makes it authentic and mesmerizing. Because nobody else can think the way Baba told the story. Nobody else could tell it like that.
He can just recreate that scene in your mind.
Yeah, and he did. These kind of things, only he could bring out. No, nobody else can. Because he was there. He knows what happened. So, obviously.
So, it was a really very fulfilling, more than a month with Swami.
Oh, yes. It was not only fulfilling, it was... It was a different experience. It was something totally out of the way. Like, one of the things was, one commandment of Baba was that nobody should get up early. Everybody said, everybody's been working hard, so nobody should get up before 7 o'clock.
Is it?
Yes.
He wanted to relax.
Yes, in Ooty. So, all of us were used to getting up early, so we used to just lie in our bed until 7 o'clock. And then, you know, get ready quickly and then go down for breakfast because Baba will, you know, come in a half an hour or so. So we wanted to have his darshan.
Yeah.
And then, you know, staying in a room right next to Baba, he would just walk out, you know. One day he just walked out and he said, anybody got a pen? I have to write something down. And then I think my brother gave him the pen and then Swami took it and he went inside. He wrote something.
You can't imagine.
And then he came out and he said, whose pen was it? So my brother said, Swami, it's mine. He said, Swami said, thank you. And he it was like, you know.
Staying in a house, I mean.
Absolutely. So informal. Very informal. We don't see him all the time here, you know. We just see him when he comes for darshan. But that time, you can see him.
All the
right
time.
From the time when he comes out of the room, until the time he retires. And even sometimes after that, you know, before that. So, it was. In fact, I remember a very funny incident that took place. It was in the afternoon. We were getting ready for the evening darshan in Kodaikanal. We were in inside room. You know, we were preparing for the darshan and my brother was brushing his teeth. So while brushing his teeth, he wanted to peep out to see, you know, if there's any activity from Swami's side and whether people are getting ready or not to come out. So he opened the door to see that and who's standing there? Swami. And he was brushing his teeth. So in his shock, what he did was, he said, oh, and he closed the door. And then he realized what he did. He said, oh my God, what did I do? And he opened the door again. And Swami was laughing. And we were all in different positions, in different modes of getting dressed. And then he just walked into the room like, you know, it was normal. Like you walk into a hostel room every time.
Your mother will walk into your room any time.
Yeah. And
and you had the chance to see, as you were mentioning, like Swami from dawn till dusk.
Yes.
The way he leads his life. And perhaps there are so many lessons for us.
Yeah, and the only way I can describe every day of those days was, it was divine. It was just out of the world. You know, that's how it was. Then I said, for me it was a life-fulfilling experience, you know. I didn't need anything after that. You know, it was like he filled your cup, you know, to the brim, like that.
And after that, you came back to Prashanthanilayam, and that is when you had finished your education.
Yes.
And you had to decide,
yes,
what to do in life.
Yeah, actually, it wasn't like that. It was on the last day, he gave Vibhuti Namaskar and everything and said, okay, now you all go back. And we came back to Puttaparthi. And I remember coming to my room, to my parents, and, you know, I rolled out my mat the next day and I said, now enough of these studies. Now I am going to concentrate only on my sadhana and on Swami and things, and nothing to disturb me. And I told my parents, please don't pester me to look for a job for some time. For some time I want to just focus on Baba, you know, that kind of thing. And I rolled out my mat and I was, you know, getting ready for lunch or something. And knock, knock, knock on the door. Somebody came. Vice Chancellor is calling you immediately.
You just come,
yeah,
back.
I just come back. And I said, oh my God, what did I do? You know, because usually the Vice Chancellor only calls you if you've done something wrong. So anyway, I got dressed and I went running up to the ad block. And the moment he saw me, he said, what are you doing here? I was flabbergasted. I said, sir, what do you mean? I don't understand. He said, Swami is waiting for you in Brindavan. You have been appointed as a lecturer there. What are you doing here? I said, sir, I don't know. He said, well, if you don't know, you know now. Immediately pack your bags and go. So me and one another student had been appointed. We just packed our bags. And we left for Vrindavan. Now the problem was, Baba was going to come back the early next morning. So we just had enough time to reach in time so that, you know, tell Baba what had happened, because otherwise it would be difficult, you know.
Yeah. So one darshan you have.
Yeah, it was just one darshan. So we reached quite late, towards the end, somewhere around 7, 7:30. Baba was just ending his discourse. Somehow we, you know, sneaked in from the back and we sat in a place where we thought the Baba would, you know, see us. And he was like, acted as if, you know, nothing had happened. And the moment he saw us, he said, ah, come. And he took us, both of us, to another room just nearby. And he said, kya hai? And he said, Swami, Vice Chancellor said that we've been appointed here as lecturers and that we should join Vrindavan campus immediately. And look at Baba, you know, he doesn't say, yeah, yeah, I said, no. He said, do you want to do it? He said. Of course, what a question. Both of us jumped and said, of course, Swami, we want to do it. Marzi hai? And said, Swami, of course, whatever you say, we'll do. If you say, become a lecturer, we'll become a lecturer. Then he said, acha, acha, Manchari, do namaskar and, you know, join here. And then that's how we joined it.
He didn't have a choice, he didn't have to think, everything is planned.
Of course, yeah. And he didn't let me wait even a second. For a minute or two. My mother was laughing. She said, what were you saying before you
But I think the sadhana continued.
Yeah, he's kind. At the same time, he's a hard taskmaster.
Yes.
And see, ultimately, we should not lose sight of the goal.
Exactly.
The purpose of all life is to reach the source.
Exactly.
And that is where he always leads us, you know. However hard it may be and however tough. If it is hard for us, I'm sure it must be more hard for him also.
Exactly.
You know?
I think if we are experiencing this pain,
yeah,
he definitely is experiencing that pain,
oh, yes,
as you mentioned,
yes,
much more,
yes,
deeply. It's like a mother, if we are suffering for whatever reason,
no,
the mother suffers even more.
We cannot imagine how a personality like Baba would, you know, how sensitive it can be. It's a divine personality. It's not a human personality. You know, the amount of pain or the amount of joy we feel is nothing compared to what he feels. It's much more. And look at it from his point of view. Like you said, like a mother, you know, if she sees that her child is failing or falling, how would the mother feel, you know? She would feel terrible. And Swami would feel even more, because he's not one mother. He said he's like 1,000 mothers. People may or may not accept it, but I'm sure that he doesn't give up on you. He doesn't give up on you.
Fantastic. I think we should pause for now. There is so much more that you can share. After you left the portals and you've been now in the Sultanate of Oman for so many years, and I know in your own ways you must have been feeling his presence. And it's one thing practicing Swami's teachings when you are in this environment as a student and as a faculty member, as a teacher. And once you go outside into the wide world, in that environment, to see him and to practice his teachings and to feel his presence, I think that is something else. That's another different experience. And I look forward to hearing about that part of your life too. And, you know, relate to the different things that you have learned here in all these 2 decades of stay. And then, you know, how you see the correlation of that as you meet the vicissitudes of life wherever you are. So probably in our next session, if you can dwell on those lines and, you know, your understanding of Bhagwan's teachings, I think it always changes our understanding of Bhagwan's teachings. As we grow, as we live life, it always acquires new meanings.
Yeah, I'm sure it must be. But, you know, basically the truth always remains the same. It doesn't change. It's yes. Only our perception that changes.
Exactly.
So I think when we're talking about the perception, yes, that is part of our evolving nature. You know? When one thing looks like one particular truth and then it changes, that's because we are evolving.
Yes.
But not because the truth is changing.
Exactly. Yeah. All the experiences help us to evolve. So thank you very much, sir, for coming once again. And I hope that we'll meet again where you can share the next part of your glorious journey with Bhagwan.
Certainly. It'll be a pleasure. And again, it is all Swami's grace. It is all satsang, you know.
Exactly. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India. Today is the 5th of December 2013, and the time right now is 10:47 a.m. You just heard another segment of our Fleeting Moments interview with Brother Gautam Dutt. We look forward to your feedback. As always, you can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. With that, it's time for me to close Morning Glory, and may I beg your indulgence to reflect on some magical words I have received from some fellow seekers at Bansuri Meditation in Pune, and they go like this. I quote, "Ahead of you is a magical 24 hours to be filled by you. It is a precious possession. It's yours alone. No one can take it from you. It is unstealable. Each one of us is a spark from the divine light. As we sow now, so shall we reap. The divine will lead us from darkness to endless love. Each of us can become a sanctuary lamp of love and light." Unquote. With the request to reflect on that affirmation, I ask you to please be well, stay inspired, and do whatever it takes to stay positive, and that includes staying clear of negative environments and company. Thank you for staying with us. Till we meet next Thursday, loving Sai Ram from all of us at Radio Sai, and now I invite you to enjoy Bhajan Bliss till Raghu signs in at 11 with Service Love in Action. Jai Sai Ram.
Namah Shivaya,
Shivaya, Namah 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 Shivaya, Namah
Bye.